Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to The Boss's Desk, where we look out for you, giving you the best in geek movies, news, and culture. I'm your host for the day, the Big Boss, and I'm here with my fellow geek guru, the Professor. What's going on, partner?
What's happening, brother? What's going on?
Nothing much. Just grinding away. About to bang out another review today. We got a spoiler-filled Ant-Man and the Wasp review. Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. Yeah. Definitely was a good film. I think it was a solid one. It was a solid outing. It wasn't like, I think people, like the preliminary reviews that I've been hearing all have to do with the fact that this one came right after Infinity War. So I'm not really surprised that, you know, people kind of felt like this was smaller, no pun intended, than Infinity War. But I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense that it was a smaller scale, you know.
You'd have to expect that. I mean, Infinity War is a culmination of 10 years worth of movies.
Yeah,
they weren't going to make Ant-Man and the Wasp a larger scale movie than that. That just wasn't
right. So it's just like, I like what they did. I think they accomplished what they set out to do. They added some good features to it. And I think we can look forward to a lot of solid plot points in this movie being incorporated in Avengers 4. So I'm looking forward to that. So
it seems that way. It does kind of seem that way. I mean, it's a really solid sequel.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't fall into that issue where the sequel doesn't match up to the first one. So. You know, I don't know that I liked it more than the first one, but I definitely liked it just as much.
Yeah, definitely.
So I kind of put them both on the same level scale as far as the two movies go.
Yeah. And that's kind of like where I'm at with it, too. It's like, it has its moments. It does have its, you know, points to shine on. But as far as the novelty of the first one, I definitely enjoyed that, the heist feel of the first one. This one was just kind of like running from the law type of storyline. So I'm definitely feeling the vibe, but I missed the novelty of the first one. But it's cool. I think this was a good outing for a sequel.
And there are some heist aspects too. In this one.
Yeah.
Not obviously not as heavy. I mean, the first movie is basically all revolved around a heist of sorts. But this definitely has some pieces here and there that kind of lend to that same thing. So it had a very similar feel at times.
Yeah.
To the first one. But it really is kind of about, it really turns out to be more about them kind of as a team than individuals, which is good.
Yeah.
It kind of was cool to see them all working together.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, once the initial stuff got taken care of.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go ahead and dive into an even more intense, detailed review for this movie. We're going to follow the format that we've been adopting lately. So let's go ahead and let's start talking about our favorite moments. Let's talk about some of the favorite moments we had in this movie. So go ahead and start us off, Professor.
Let's see. Favorite moments from this movie. So ultimately my most favorite part of the entire movie is the first after credit scene, which is kind of a weird thing to say is my favorite part of the movie, but
yeah.
That first after credit scene they come across, which we'll, you know, probably get into a little bit later, is literally had, I don't know why I wouldn't have seen it coming.
Right.
But I didn't. And it was a bit of a jaw dropping moment for me. Like, oh wow, they actually did it.
Yeah.
I wasn't even expecting it. Favorite moments. I don't know if I had one specific favorite moment.
Right.
I liked the introduction of the ghost character. Mm-hmm. I liked, you know, her interactions throughout the movie. I liked the initial scene with Bill Foster, with Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
You know, where you're kind of finding out that it was all a big fallout between Foster and Pym.
Yeah.
And, you know, he and Scott start to, kind of go back and forth a little bit on, you know, well, how big did you get? the scene where Janet goes in to retrieve the piece that they're looking for to complete the tunnel is pretty badass.
Yeah.
You know, where you really learn just how badass she is as a character. Like, I know we'll get into characters a little bit more later, but I liked her a lot more in this movie than I did in the first
one. Right, right, yeah.
She's a much, much stronger character. You know, the first one, she's kind of that, I hate my daddy, you all suck kind of character.
Yeah.
In this one, she's very much a big player, and she's absolutely a superhero.
Yeah.
You know, in the movie, she's kind of what you would expect. I wouldn't be surprised to at some point see them maybe do a movie with just her.
Right.
To just do a Wasp movie.
Yeah.
Because that's how strong she is.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I would go even as far to say I feel like Janet's more of an Avenger than Scott is. Cause,
oh, yeah. Well, for sure. For sure. I mean, look, Scott's basically a big doofus, right? Like, he's just, he kind of fails his way through everything, but figures it out. She's that trained, you know, fighter at this point. She's, you know, she knows her suit left and right. Yeah. She's got all the gadgets and stuff in it. So she's definitely more of an Avenger than Scott would be.
Yeah, she makes that comment in the movie, like, and when he asks her, if I had asked you to come to Berlin with me, would you have? And she's like, I would have. And she was like, well, you wouldn't have, you'll never know.
So we'll never know, but if I had,
you wouldn't have got caught. Yeah, and I believe that wholeheartedly. Like, if it was her that went to go get that piece in Ant-Man 1 that needed to be retrieved, if she had the Wasp costume, she would have thoroughly handled Falcon.
Oh, she would have beat that. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I guess the other big scene that I really enjoy is most of the end of the movie is that big chase scene.
Yeah, yeah, that was
fun. Just a lot of fun. Yeah. With the, you know, one of the things they designed in the movie is that, you know, PIM technology can shrink and enlarge cars as they're on the move.
Right.
So they're using that to get away from people, to take out other cars. Just this really kind of really fun chase. You know, you kind of, you're almost on the edge of your seat a little bit because it's really like a big car chase.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when Scott is basically Giant Man and he's using the flatbed truck as a scooter. He's just kind of pushing himself down the street is pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah, that was hilarious.
So those would definitely be some of my favorite
moments. Yeah, yeah. My favorite moments are pretty much in line with yours. I definitely like how they filled us in on where Scott has been and why he wasn't in Infinity War. He was kind of just like, I mean, he's kind of like tethered to the West Coast. Like, he can't go anywhere, house arrest.
Right.
It's so intense to the point where he's built like this wonderland for his daughter out of cardboard boxes.
That's cool. At the very beginning.
That was really cool. Like, that's a big nod to the family aspect of this type of storytelling. So I mean, as far as it goes, this movie reached out to far more audience members because it's the varying ages that it called out to. But yeah, like, just filling us in on where Scott has been and why he wasn't in Infinity War. That was pretty dope. Intro to the Wasp, like you said, like, Janet's a beast. I can't wait to see her in Avengers 4 or just in any of the stories that they have lined up. I know they've been talking about this, the whole female cast Marvel movie. That would be epic beyond proportion. I'm looking forward to seeing something like that, especially if she is going to be a part of the ensemble. Intro to the Quantum Realm. The Quantum Realm was pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Quantum.
Yeah, like, cool. as you see Scott enter and you see Hank enter a couple times to pull out Janet. Watching the shift is very reminiscent of Doctor Strange. Like, you can feel a lot of the mirror realm, some of the other different realms that he traveled to in that kind of like psychedelic trip that the Ancient One kind of sends him through. And I've always liked that bridge, like the quote that always says, you know, magic. In the past, like, how people looked at magic is basically science that hasn't been explained yet, you know, and that's the feel that you get here. It's like this whole realm that we got introduced to in Doctor Strange, there's a very scientific way to travel there, to journey there, to pull information, to pull energy from it. It's a very tangible existing realm that even us mere mortals can access with the right technology. Right. Yeah, so I can't wait to see how they employ this in future movies and in Fantastic Four, Avengers.
Well, they could.
I mean, yeah, they could. They very much could. Avengers 4 coming up. So to see how a Quantum Realm is going to play in those stories, it'll be interesting to see. It'll definitely be interesting to see. And we'll talk more about the Quantum Realm. I think when we get around the ending, we'll talk about those end credit scenes and, you know, see what happens there.
I do think also there might be some merit to the rumors where they're talking about, you know, so a lot of the rumors for Avengers 4 is it's a lot of time travel.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
One of the things they've talked about is traveling into the future.
Right.
And one of the things they've talked about a lot with that is that his daughter, what's her name, Cassie, I think,
yeah,
they say that a future version of her plays a big role in Avengers 4.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of lend some merit to that in this, in the sense that, you know, they have that big scene with the two of them. They're, you know, in the bedroom,
yeah,
talking.
Yeah, a lot of foreshadowing.
Like, well, I thought I was your, you know, I thought I would be the one to watch your back, you know? He's like, oh, I'd be a horrible father if I let you do that. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of foreshadowing to that particular point. I think we might actually see that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it won't be the same girl because she's probably under 10.
Yeah, but, no, they've already cast, I believe they've already casted an older version of Cassie for Avengers 4, so, you know.
So then it would make perfect sense.
Yeah, it would make perfect sense if they decide to go that route. And I think they did a really good job of foreshadowing that in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And there's a lot of similarities between Hope's relationship with Hank and, you know, Cassie's relationship with Scott.
Yeah.
I could see... And I'm, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and hit on it now since we're talking about it. We're all up in the end credit scene and all that stuff. There's a moment in the end credit scene where Janet basically tells Scott, like, hey, you're going to be going back into the quantum realm, the quantum verse. So when you get in there, just get the healing energy. And let us know, and we'll pull you out. Don't get pulled into any of the what does she call them? Time rifts or
something
time
like
portals,
yeah,
or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
If you get lost in those, we won't be able to pull you out.
We'll never get
get you back. Like this is a whole situation basically where they're creating the same type of situation that Janet went through, where she shrunk to the quantum verse and they couldn't get her out. Scott's going to probably encounter that same thing, because when we end the movie, they kind of leave Scott in the quantum verse. So I wouldn't be surprised if come down the line, Cassie's going to be trying to figure out a way to get Scott out of the quantum verse. So yeah, I mean, it's doing a really good job of framing and setting up Avengers 4 and how everybody's going to be taking a part in that, and how that's going to, you know, set up the story for Avengers 4.
Could see Cassie working with Bill Foster.
Yeah.
To be the one to try to save Scott from the quantum realm.
Yep.
I could see that. I could definitely see
that. Yeah. I mean, the movie itself, it wasn't like really overpowering. If I could talk about any of my other favorite moments within the film, outside of what you already discussed, I love Ghost's backstory. I love this new step that and we can just dive right into favorite characters, I guess, now. I love what they're doing with Marvel villains now. Like, the Marvel villains aren't just black and white, like, oh, these are the darkest of the dark, the scum of the earth type guys. Like, these villains have very poignant stories, and they have very valid reasons to feel the way that they feel in the universe that they're in. This is no longer I remember when they first started talking about start building up through the Avengers storyline, Vision says something like, when you guys started the Avengers, you created this point in power that begs to be challenged. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's something where they were kind of foreshadowing they were trying to foreshadow Thanos, but even Thanos was a complicated villain in and of himself. You know what I'm saying? But I love where they're going now. It's not so much these villains coming to challenge the power of the Avengers. It's these characters that are, you know, downtrodden in their own universe and their own story arcs, and they're trying to make sense of the world, and they're trying to make things valid for them. And it just happens to come at any cost with no, you know, regard for collateral damage. And this is, that's just the downside of it. But these villains are very relatable characters that are desperate. Like Ghost was a very desperate villain, you know, like yeah. she just wanted things to change for her, because she was in this permanent state of flux as a result of her father's experiments to access the quantum verse. And like her fluxing like state of being, like she would phase in and out of things out of her control. You know, she just wanted to be able to stay grounded and not feel the constant pain of her molecules basically ripping apart. You know what I'm saying? So I love the character of Ghost and like where it develops. You feel the desperation in her struggle. And then when everything kind of finally comes to a head, when she finally realizes that there's other alternatives, and Janet comes and really ultimately saves her. You know, it until then, it's like you kind of like you don't fault her for her drive, you know?
Right.
So those are always good moments.
Yeah, we talked about it a lot with Bushmaster and Killmonger, kind of the same type of characters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like,
Killmonger, we said, was a little bit different because he kind of goes from bad guy to sympathetic character, totally back to bad guy again before the movie's over. Bushmaster follows a very similar arc to what Ghost does, where he starts really as the bad guy, but as the season goes on, you learn what the story is behind him and kind of why he is how he is. You know, and like you said with Ghost, you know, the background story basically, you know, in a quick nutshell, is her father at one point had worked with Hank Pym. I think they have some kind of falling out, and the father leaves, or Pym gets him fired. He tries to recreate the studies
mm-hmm.
for someone else, and the experiment goes awry, and it's the the portal he's trying to create basically is going critical and it's going to explode. So he tries to send his wife and daughter away. The daughter breaks away from the wife, comes running back to him. The portal explodes. The parents die, but she, like you said, ends up in this constant state of flux where it's literally tearing her entire body apart.
Yeah.
So she goes to Bill Foster, who takes her in, and he helps her. Well, okay, so Foster actually goes to her.
Right. He finds out.
He finds out about her. He goes and he tries to help her control her power. And they kind of come to the conclusion that the only way to really save her life, mm-hmm. to cure this issue, is to drain the power of the quantum verse to heal her. That will allow her to stabilize, and she won't be pulling apart anymore, and she'll survive.
Right.
The trouble being, that particular method would kill Janet, because Janet's living in the quantum verse. Like, she's pretty much the only thing outside of weird organisms living in.
Right.
And that's where they come head to head with Hank and Hope, because they're like, well, you can't kill, you know, our mother and our wife. And she's like, but I want to live too. So this is what's going to happen. And you know, as it goes through and you learn all these things, you're like, wow, that's really kind of like, you understand both sides ultimately. Because,
yep.
you know, if you're Ghost, you want to live. You don't want to die. You want to, this is the way you, they know how to solve you, fix you,
mm-hmm.
you know, is doing it this way. But if you're Hope, she wants her mom back. If you're Hank, he wants his wife back.
Right.
And doing what she wants to do would probably kill her. They don't know, but they said chances are good that it would kill her. You know, so it's that whole, you know, kind of not quite Sophie's Choice, but kind of that whole idea when it comes down to
yeah.
it. You know, it makes them all very, very sympathetic characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching the whole thing. You know, even Foster kind of, like when we first meet Bill Foster, he's just a college professor.
Right.
Right. And he and Hank have been at odds for years because, again, they got into a fight over things. You kind of start to learn that Hank's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
you know, down deep. And has been for, you know, when he was working with S.H.I.E.L.D. still. You know, when Foster breaks away from him when Hank leaves S.H.I.E.L.D. and he goes to work for S.H.I.E.L.D., but he ends up leaving them to become a teacher. And he helps them. He helps them try to find the lab. The lab at this point has been taken by Ghost. And Foster gives them a way to go try to find it. Well, you find out that Foster's been working with her the entire time.
Right.
You know, and they kind of give their plan away as to what they want to do. And then Foster switches that switch again at the end where he's like, no, this isn't right. There has to be another way. You know, we can save you both. We can save Janet and we can save you, yep. You know, as he's talking to Ghost.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, no, this is going to be it. And she basically, you know, takes him out. So it's interesting to watch the changes everybody goes through, you know, in this particular movie without even really too much of an effort.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, there's the way it was written really well.
Yeah.
The transition from the piece to piece was so smooth. It was a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. You know, it's one of those where there's some slowdown moments in the movie, but you don't feel it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when we're talking about Jurassic World. Jurassic World had some slowdown moments, and you really felt it because there were just some really dead times and dead moments in the movie that didn't go anywhere. Ant-Man and the Wasp has some of those downtimes, but the parts that are down are still kind of integral to the story.
Yeah.
Or integral maybe to something that comes next, because we don't learn, I don't think, everything from this movie. Like everything that happens in the movie, we don't learn the reasoning behind all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those downtimes where you're kind of learning some of those stories, they're still really integral to the story, and you find yourself more interested as to what's going on with that as well before it kind of kicks back into the main part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really well. This one was really well written as far as I was concerned. I thought,
and that's basically what we were talking about earlier. Like, this is a really solid outing for a Marvel film, and a lot of people. I guess it just didn't have as much action or stakes because we're not dealing with cosmic destruction, but it's just like it in its simplicity. I think it was a solid film, and like you said, the writing was top notch because the transitions aren't felt. You don't really feel like there are too many dead moments, and it's like the character development goes exactly where it needs to go. Like you really get to learn a lot about these people, and interesting enough, just the whole idea, like even Ghost's backstory kind of hinges on the dark years of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. was, for all intents and purposes, was Hydra at one point. You know what I'm saying? It was just Hydra with a mask on. And they used her the same way that they used Bucky, the Winter Soldier. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They exploited her abilities. They exploited the fact that she was in this constant state of flux so that she could, for all intents and purposes, be an assassin, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like, wow, it's like not all our bad guys are all that bad, and not all our good guys are all that good, you know? And it's just that constant question that I think Marvel's been playing with these past couple of movies that have really progressed well. You know, so yeah, I really enjoyed this one, and it's like
I really did too.
Yeah, yeah. Like my favorite characters were all the new, well, definitely all the old players, like the guys we got to see before. But like our newcomers, I consider the Wasp a newcomer because she didn't really get that much time to shine in the last one.
Right.
So the Wasp, Bill Foster, Ghost, even Janet Van Dien coming onto the scene, who almost is a cosmic entity, I want to say now, because she's been in the quantum verse for so long. She's developed these abilities and this access to, I guess, I want to say molecular connections that she's able to kind of like, well, it looks like magic. It looks like magic on screen, but it's just like her body's adapted to that level of molecular interaction that she can kind of control it now with her own energies, which is cool. So it's like she basically heals Ghost and like has an access to the quantum verse that nobody else ever really had.
That's one of the few things about the movie that I'm not entirely sure how I feel about just yet. I'm not a big fan of the idea that because she was in the Quantumverse for 30 years that now she's got these powers that she can do just about anything with, it kind of seems like, right? She can heal people with and whatnot. I would have preferred to have seen them done something where she somehow managed to scavenge her suit and create a new technology that could do that, mm-hmm. And that's how she was able to stay alive those 30 years, mm-hmm. that this piece of technology was able to pull the energy from the quantum realm and put it in her body and save her that way.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. I think the idea of giving someone powers that they never had, like, I realize not every comic book movie can match the comics to a T.
Right.
I realize right. that. But one of the things that always bothered me was giving people abilities that they never had in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my biggest issues with Days of Future Past was that they make Kitty Pryde able to, you know, psychically hold Wolverine in the modern day while he's going back in time.
Right.
It's not something she was ever able to do.
Yeah.
You know, the character that did that was Rachel Summers, which was, you know, the future daughter of Scott and Jean. She was the character in the comics that did that. And with Days of Future Past, they introduced so many new characters. To not just go the extra step and introduce Rachel didn't make any sense to me.
Right.
It just was silly to use Kitty in that role.
Yeah.
So when you take Janet Van Dyne and you give her these new powers that she's never had, that my recollection of the character in the comics, that just me being the kind of fan that I am bothers me a little bit. I kind of see why they would do that, and obviously it's going to probably lead somewhere for Avengers 4.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping she's not the one who comes forward to defeat Thanos in some way, shape, or form, because that wouldn't make a lot. Actually, you know, she's, you know, we talked about the extra credit scene, so I guess she's not really going to
nah.
be ultimately.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, she's not. But it's just like,
because
it was weird how they kind of did it, but I kind of understood. Especially they kind of hint at it when Hank goes into the quantumverse. So he goes into the quantumverse and he's like, I think he removes his helmet at one point.
He does.
And,
yes.
And like, you can see, like, he's starting to, and she kind of tells him through this mind link that she has with Scott that just be careful because, you know, you're going to see some things and the quantumverse is going to affect you to a point where it could drive you crazy. It's like, it's the unknown allows me to kind of reconcile that, because like I can look at it and says, well, Janet spent 30 years in this place. So it's either she could have succumbed to the will of the quantum verse, or she could try to challenge it, exist and adapt to it. And what happens when her mind adapts to that situation? You know what I'm saying? So.
Right.
That's kind of how I can reconcile it. But yeah, I can definitely understand what you're saying. Like, there's not a lot of explanation there. So I would right. like a little bit more exploration as to, I don't know if they're going to do that in deleted scenes with the DVD release, or if we're going to get that in further stories down the line. Because I think it kind of just works for what they needed it to do for this movie.
Right.
But eventually, we'll need a little bit more information as to how she can manipulate it. Is it a permanent fit? Is it a permanent thing? Or is it something that's going to fade now that she's back into the regular universe?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even my method is, it would not be the same. Like the Janet Van Dyne that I remember from the comics, mm-hmm. she's not a scientist. She's not, like, she's basically a fashionista ultimately. Like, I think she was like a model or something. And then she had her own fashion line, something along those lines, from what I remember the character. But she was always a brave character as far as the comics go. She's a strong character, but she was never like one of the brightest characters in the Marvel Universe. She was never one of the strongest characters in the Marvel Universe, you know, as far as physically would go. But she learned to, you know, use the Wasp costume and to use the Pym particles to shrink down, and that's what made her stronger. You know, she was very strong mentally, but she wasn't like a brilliant scientist. Mm-hmm. Where they've changed that in these movies to where she's kind of as equal to Hank, you know, as far as being able to be a scientist. So I'm okay with that kind of switch, because that's not as big a deal. But giving a regular human superpowers,
right,
in that sense, is the kind of thing that bugs me just a little bit.
Yeah.
Where I think if you've got her as this brilliant mind and she knows she's trapped, then maybe she could take parts of her suit apart and put something together
right,
that
right.
would allow her to absorb the energy that way.
Mm-hmm.
I thought might have made a little bit more sense. But, you know, we don't know what their plans are at this point.
Yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
we said kind of before, what's curious about it is, so the first cutscene is, like we were talking about before, Scott goes into the quantum realm. He's supposed to be harnessing some of this energy. They're going to give him a countdown when he's finished to pull him back, and it gets to 3. They go 5, 4, 3, and then the communication shut off.
Mm-hmm.
and they real quick flip from Scott to the outside where Hank, Janet, and Hope were, and all you see is the dust fading to the ground, like the end of Infinity War.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, oh, hell. Like, what now?
Yeah, he's like trapped now there.
He's trapped.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, so now Janet's not even around anymore. We don't know how much of her we're going to see in Infinity War. Yeah. Or, you know, when they bring the characters back. Obviously, they're going to bring these characters back. Do her powers disappear? Because technically, you know, she was snapped out of existence and then came back. You know, how is that going to work? We don't know.
Yeah.
I just... I get why they do that, and I get how that was the solution at the end of the movie. Just that kind of stuff always makes me just kind of wince a little bit. Like, you probably could have come up with a different method to do that.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I'm not getting paid to write these things, they are, so what do I know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember what numbers they brought in, but we'll probably talk about that in a weekly. But, it wasn't as much as the regular... You know, the regular Marvel movies, but it still was a solid opening. I know they hit one. I know they hit the number one for this past weekend. Right. But yeah, man, I'm interested to see where they go. I'm interested to see where they go because now that Scott is trapped in the Quantumverse for all intents and purposes. I mean, we were talking about it earlier. You made a good point. Like Cassie may be the one that comes from the future to grab him, but we've also seen. On the scene photos of Scott with the Avengers in what looks like the Battle of New York. So it looks like,
yeah.
So whatever those time holes or time rifts were, they're either going to shoot Scott out into the future or to the past. We know for sure he's going to be in the past, but we just don't know how he gets there. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But yeah, I mean, I think the film was just great, action packed, character development was good. I really liked where the story went. Who's the guy that we always, Luis? Is it Luis?
Luis. Yes.
Yo, Luis is, he's back and he's better than he ever was. I mean, the storytelling is on point.
I'll tell you what, one thing I was just thinking of that was one of my favorite parts of this movie. It's stunning how well they now have the technology to de-age these actors.
Oh, yeah.
And show past versions. It's unbelievable how flawless it looks. There's a flashback scene with Hope as a little kid with Janet and Hank leaving the house. And it looks like almost like 30 or 40 years ago. If you look at the actors, if you look at Michael Douglas and you look at Michelle Pfeiffer, they literally look like they would have filmed the scene 20 or 30 years ago. They look so young. And they even do it with Lawrence Fishburne later.
Yep.
When they show him meet Ghost for the first time.
He looked like a thicker version of Lawrence Fishburne from Boys in the Hood.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. You know, it's amazing how they just look so, it literally looks like they were filmed in the past.
Yeah.
It's how perfect this technology is. So it's unbelievable. I can't wait to see how Samuel is going to look in Captain Marvel because they're going to do that to him the entire movie.
Yeah, they said what did they de-age him and Coulson? They de-aged them 20 years?
Well, 25? Well, it's 1990s, I think, the movie's taking place. Yeah. So it's going to be 20 years. Yeah.
Man.
2020, almost 30 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
he had a weird post today. We can talk about that on the main podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He had a weird Instagram post today. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw the SHIELD business card.
That, I did see that, yes.
Okay, okay.
That was funny.
All right.
But there was, like, this shot of this, like, almost looked like a brown egg, like a big brown egg. And it just had these weird pieces of hair.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, "What the
hell?" Oh, you know that's his.
Well, because then I flip to the next picture, and it's his close up of him with the scars on his eye again. And I'm like, "Oh,
yeah.
That's his facial hair and whatnot."
So I think
I
think he's shooting really the scenes bizarre. For Avengers 4. Is he shooting scenes for Avengers 4?
One thing I read today said they're wondering if he's shooting scenes for Far From Home.
Oh, that's right.
Because that's what's filming right now.
Yeah.
So they were saying maybe he's gonna cameo in Far From Home.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could see that happening.
Yeah, because the one character is supposed to be like an international assassin, right?
Yeah.
So would kind of make sense to have the former head of S.H.I.E.L.D., who would keep a track of every assassin in the world, show up to kind of talk to Spidey about it.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense. Oh, I've been looking forward to a Spidey and Nick Fury kind of meeting, because I used to watch the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon that used to come right on, and that's basically all it was. It was Nick Fury recruiting Spider-Man to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. intern and work to be a part of the Avengers initiative. And it's just like the back and forth. It's just like a teacher student type of relationship. It's just like, oh man, this kid's getting on my nerves again.
I can pretty much see that kind of running.
Yeah.
How this is going to go. You know, much like in Infinity War.
Yeah.
I am Peter, Doctor Strange. Oh, we're using their made up names.
I'm Spider Man.
It's one of the best.
Yo, scenes. It really is.
Oh, I cannot wait for that. It's coming out soon. I cannot wait to watch that again.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you know, one thing I did learn about Ant-Man and the Wasp is the character that Hope deals with to get the little piece of tech that she's trying to get.
Yes.
Sonny Birch.
Yep. Walton Goggins.
Yeah. His secret buyer, I think, was confirmed by the writers or producers of the movie, was confirmed to be Norman Osborn.
Really?
Yeah. His secret buyer is Norman Osborn. Little Spider-Man plug there.
I never heard that.
I'll have to check it again just to confirm and be sure. But I'm pretty sure they said that Norman Osborn is the secret buyer for Sonny Birch. So
that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be dope. Because at least we know, the Spider-Man that we're going to see that's associated with the Avengers is going to have his main bad guy, which I'm hoping for. Cause,
sure, yeah.
Yeah, because all these spinoffs are nice, but it's just like, how many characters are we going to have for the actual main Spider-Man that we're seeing right now in the MCU? Right. So, yeah.
The other piece I saw that I thought was interesting was they were talking to Peyton Reed, I think his name is, the guy uh-huh. who directed the movie.
Uh-huh.
And they were basically asking him, you know, is Yellowjacket dead for sure? And he was like, we never really said that. You know, Janet survived in the Quantum Realm for 30 years. He might still be in there.
Oh, God.
So they haven't given up on the Yellowjacket character yet either, which could be interesting.
And if we saw what abilities that Janet received while she was there, I mean, yeah, it's a shorter time, but time runs differently in the Quantumverse.
Yes, it does.
So, I don't think his suit wasn't destroyed, right? His suit wasn't destroyed.
No, he basically just kind of shrunk in on himself.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of funky. It was very painful by the screams the guy lets out.
Yeah.
But he was basically reduced to, you know, microscopic levels or quantum levels, whatever they're calling
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and disappeared supposedly into the quantum realm. So he could very much come back.
And I don't think he handled the craziness that the Quantumverse put you through as well as Janet did. So,
oh no, for sure.
So this is going to be one of those bad guys, folks, that is just purely insane. So
yeah, if they do bring him back, absolutely.
And you know, I don't, that's refreshing. Like every once in a while you need a Joker, you know what I'm saying? You need a straight up ambassador of chaos, and you know, that'll be nice to see.
Not so sure about the casting of that character.
Oh man!
About that on the other podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on the main show. But yeah, I mean, so if you want to know it from us, go see the movie. I mean, if you're listening to this already, you know that this is a spoiler filled review. So you've either already seen it or you don't mind spoilers. There are a few people out in the world who do not mind spoilers before they go see a movie. So
yes.
So if you haven't seen it, go see it. It is definitely a must.
Go see it. It's definitely worth your time. It's a good
movie. It just to fill in the gaps, and it does such a good job of existing on its own, but doing so much setup. because whatever Avengers 4 is going to do is definitely going to test the limits. I can't wait to see what happens in Captain Marvel and then what that sets up for Avengers 4. So, yeah, man.
Yep, sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is it. That is it for us here at the Boss's Desk. So, if you're tuning in for the first time, don't forget to follow us on all of our social media outlets. We're on Facebook, The Boss's Desk, Twitter, at The Boss's Desk, and YouTube, The Boss's Desk. We also have this podcast up on both Google Play and iTunes, so subscribe to this channel there for regular updates and new episodes. And if you have any questions about anything you hear in the show, I mean, we drop a couple bombs, couple Easter eggs, couple, what we think is going to happen in the future. You got any questions about that? Just drop us a line on Twitter. Just tweet at the Boss's Desk or hit us with an email at questions@thebossesdesk.com. And whatever questions you drop for us, you might hear it here on the Geek News of the Week. That is it for us today, folks. And we will catch you next time. We are out.